Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. In just 2 days, thousands are expected to come to the nation's capital to commemorate the 1963 March on Washington. 57 years ago, it was the March for Jobs and Freedom. But now, for this commitment march, there are so many issues facing a divided America, especially for people of color. Among those issues, the name of Jacob Blake added to the list of unarmed black men shot by police. Tonight, we talk about the issues and preview the commitment march. My guests are attorney and activist Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz and Tyleek McMillan, policy advisor for the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Shabazz and Tyleek, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Tyleek, let me start with you. This says it's called a commitment march. Is this a commemoration or a protest? How would you describe it?
Well, thanks again for having me. My name is Tyleek. I serve as the National Director of Youth in College. But National Action Network has always commemorated the marches in the spirit and tradition of Dr. King. We are one of the nation's leading civil rights organizations. But as we always do, we are commemorating the 57th anniversary of the March on Washington, where Dr. King gave his I Have a Dream speech, where we are recommitting ourselves to Dr. King's dream for a better America. So we are excited to commemorate Dr. King's dream that he spoke about in 1963.
Okay. But that was 57 years ago. That's certainly a commemoration. But this is not necessarily a celebration. I think it's safe to say that. And considering all of the things that we have experienced over the past several months, over the past several days, over the past several hours, certainly these are the kinds of issues that are going to be addressed on Friday. Do you believe that an accurate statement?
Well, I think as always, when you honor the history of where we've come and also you honor the current moment, as we know, when Dr. King gave his speech, it wasn't a celebratory. He was speaking truth to power. And in this moment, as we always commemorate, we always speak to truth to power to the current situations that we find ourselves in. We understand, as Reverend Sharpton said, at the funeral of George Floyd, to get the knee off our neck. We understand that for 401 years, there has been plenty of knees in the necks of black people in this country. So we're talking about economics and education and healthcare, broadband accessibility, and all these issues that impact communities of color, and especially police violence that happens within communities. So we understand, you know, the moment that we're in, and we understand our power. We understand that this is an election year. We understand that folks need to get registered to vote. And this administration has done all it could do to marginalize and keep black and brown folks from access to the ballot. And so we understand that. We understand that the 2020 census is at stake and our fair count is at stake. And so we understand all of those challenges, but we also honor you know, the leadership that Dr. King had in the dream that he spoke of and to where we are in this moment, while also lifting the issues that that are currently what we deal with in this moment.
Mm. Dr. Shabazz, Tyleek mentioned something that I thought was important, not just the speech at George Floyd's funeral about getting the knees off our necks, but how about getting the guns out of our backs and all of those other issues. What do you believe this commitment march should most symbolize?
What it obviously symbolizes is that America has gotten worse, and that the dream that Dr. Martin Luther King dreamed of is a current nightmare. And so Black Lawyers for Justice position is that America has gone backwards, and there's little to commemorate. And so I will be there with my longtime ally, Reverend Al Sharpton, and Black Lawyers for Justice and the New Black Panther Party. We will be there. But after seeing Jacob Blake gunned down again, brutally shot in the back like a dog, and knowing that white racist police actions are increasing, despite everything that occurred with after George Floyd, it's still occurring. Trump hasn't done anything about it. It was going on in Ferguson and Baltimore under Obama. I could not lie to you and tell you that Joe Biden can solve it. And so what I will be there is expecting what would to know what black leadership will do, because as far as I'm looking at it, it's all-out warfare. From Keonia, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, Washington, D.C., and around the country, I can't play this lightweight today and lie to our people. Really, little has changed, and the people are getting angrier, and things are getting worse.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the commitment march this Friday. It is to commemorate the 57th anniversary of the March for Jobs and Freedom, also known as the historic March on Washington. If you have a comment, if you have a question, are you going to go on Friday? Of course, the WHUR news team will be there. We will be broadcasting and filing reports throughout the day on Friday. And we certainly invite you to listen on WHUR. But for those of you who will not just be listening or watching perhaps at home, are you going to go? Why or why not? I do want to hear from you again. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Zero. You know, Tyleek, you spoke about speaking truth to power. On Friday, who is this message for? Is this for preaching to the choir? Do you believe that the people who need to hear will be listening if it is not preaching to the choir?
Yeah, well, I think it's an address to those in leadership to make change. As we understand, as I said before, voting in our democracy is at stake. We understand where early polling places are being removed and mail-in ballots is being made harder, the access and funding for elections. And so we understand that legislation must be passed to protect our right to vote. And so that's why we are calling for the passage of the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. That's why we're calling for the passage of the George Floyd Police Justice and Policing Act, because we understand we want to move from demonstration to legislation. We understand that yes, our voices are in the streets, and yes, we are making noise, but we know that we want to see legislation put in place. We want folks to go back to their communities and talk to their elected officials, to talk to their mayors, to talk to their city council members, to talk to their board of supervisors, to understand that we want to see legislative change that will affect the systemic changes that affect communities of color.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Daniel. Daniel calling from Fort Washington. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay. I'd like to speak about the negative comments and a negative narrative about President Trump and his administration.
Okay, make your comments quick. Got a lot of phone calls on the line. Go right ahead, please.
All right. Okay. What I'm trying to say is everything is negative, and that's a complete lie. And I think that a lot of blacks, they have a prejudiced nature, and they walk around with a self-righteous attitude, and they put this man in judgment. Although he's been sent by God to deal with spiritual things, but his administration has done tremendous things for blacks.
Number one,
how he's closed the borders, which stopped the Latinos from coming over, which would decrease the unemployment rate. He has guaranteed $250 million a year for HBCUs instead of them having to come to Congress to ask for it. Criminal justice reform. He has commuted a lot of people's sentences and let people out of jail that had these irregular prison sentences that has been implemented by Obama and crooked Kamala Harris with her asking for money while she was in office.
Well, let me stop you there, Daniel. Dr. Shabazz, do you have some thoughts that you would like to share with Daniel?
I can hardly hear you.
I would say it's shameful. It's shameful when WHUR and the subject matter here is the brutality of our people who are being continuously gunned down in the street. And any black person get up here to volunteer to parrot for this president of the United States, who the public and the polls and even white people agree that he is a racist, and he contributes to this lawless, racist environment. And so that caller speaks for himself. That has no merit to me in this hour. Mm-hmm. And legislatively, in all due respect, it's as a civil rights and human rights attorney and a wrongful death attorney, Malik Shabazz is saying that it's already illegal to shoot a black man in the back. It's already illegal to shoot any human being in the back. It's illegal to put your knee in to strangle the life out of. Murder is already illegal. No new legislation is needed. So once again, I have to say that although this is a Democratic Republican Party election, I'm not concerned about the politics. I'm concerned about the fact that America is not changing, and I will not say that a new politician in office coming from either side is going to stop the nature of a people that are shooting us in the back. And so we must talk about stronger actions here on this line if we're going to be realistic. Much stronger actions. Okay. That's what I would have to say.
Daniel,
we need stronger positions.
Talik, would you like to respond to what Daniel was saying before I let him go?
I think as we look at this administration, it has been very divisive. Has been an administration that has really no sense of morale. That puts children in cages, amongst several other issues. And so, as said before, the caller speaks for itself, and the work that we have seen firsthand also speaks for itself. So that's all I have to say.
Daniel, thank you so much for giving us a call and participating in the conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the commitment march coming up this Friday and all of the issues swirling around this 57th commemoration of the March on Washington. If you have a comment or a question, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you have difficulty getting in, please keep trying. I promise I will take your phone calls all the way up until 8 o'clock. So here's the other concern. And I'll start with you, Dr. Shabazz. We are in the midst of a pandemic. It has disproportionately affected black people and other people of color more than it has impacted others. The lion's share of the nearly 180,000 Americans who have died as a result of this pandemic are people of color. And as important as this 57th commemoration may be, with black people so susceptible to COVID-19, why have a march where people are going to be gathered together in close company? Dr. Shabazz.
Well, in my opinion, it is due, the effort which I commend, is due to the seriousness of the time that it wasn't canceled. And that's why I don't think it's a commemoration. The people that I know and who are coming, many of whom are not even formally invited to the program, they're not coming. We love Dr. King, but nobody is coming to risk COVID-19 to commemorate the 63 March. they are coming because the crisis is getting worse, and we are compelled to come together to network and to talk and to see our way out of this condition. And my dear family here on WHUR, we have to weigh whether we're going to die or risk COVID, or are we going to remain silent and just die anyway? And so, therefore, I know that these organizers, this is on a Friday, so it's not on a Saturday, so it seems that they may not be expecting all them big crowds, but they're going to have people. And I believe that they're going to have masks and social distance and have proper protocols, and I believe that's why it's called on a Friday. So even, you know, I'm still saying everybody should still come out. We just stay safe. I don't recall. I know the COVID is going up around the country. We got to be cautious. So wear your mask. Wear a face shield if you got to. Wear a biological suit. But be there, because if we don't stand up for our people, more of us are going to die. And I believe that God protected the demonstrators anyway. I know COVID went up, but I still don't remember anybody in the demonstrations we were in around George Floyd and all of that getting sick.
Well, let's.
Concern is justified. Your concern is justified. We have to come and just stay safe and stay 6 feet apart.
Let me take a break, but when we come back, I want to drill down more on that, because even as you know, as a person of faith, I do believe that God does protect us. However, there are others who have said the same, and apparently did not use their God-given sense of discernment to protect some of their congregations and even individuals. We need to talk about this. Lisa, calling from Virginia. We're going to talk to you next. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. The original Quiet Storm is next on WHUR with John Mons. This conversation continues on Sirius XM. Lines are still open. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are continuing our conversation about the issues surrounding the commitment march coming up on this Friday in Washington, D.C. My guests are attorney and activist Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz and Talik McMillan with the National Action Network. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa, calling from Virginia. What's on your mind, Lisa?
Hi. I have two things to say. One is that caller that was, supporting the other party. The HBCU money got started under the Carter administration. And secondly, before President Obama left office, he pardoned a whole bunch of prisoners that maybe didn't get reported on, but he pardoned a whole bunch of them. So, you know. But secondly, I've been marching all summer. I've been to the Black Lives Matter protests in downtown D.C. a couple of times. I've been protesting the unemployment being the pandemic unemployment being stopped. I've been marching to Mitch McConnell's house. So I've been on all those marches, and I plan to be there on Friday.
Well, thank you, Lisa. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to talk a little bit about just the overall issue of marching and protesting and some of the things that we spoke about earlier that, you know, Tylee was referring to. When we have been doing that for quite some time, I'm talking about people of color, specifically African Americans in this country. But what's next beyond that? We have seen some really muscular protests just today. Just today, the Milwaukee Bucks decided that they were going to boycott Game 5 of against the Orlando Magic, and as a result, some other teams followed suit. You know, that was a very, very strong statement. We have seen, you know, some of the really difficult pictures coming out of Kenosha, Wisconsin this week. Those seem to get the attention more so than the kind of march that we're planning we will see on Friday. Beyond the march, Tyleek, what is the thing that you believe will drive the message home and make change?
I think, like I said before, folks going back to their community, we understand that, you know, local politics is the most important politics. It is in local governments that we see our budgets and for our police departments. It is in local governments that we see a direct change in communities. And so folks go back to their homes and their communities and take action locally. And so, like I said, we understand that this is a 2020 census year where we're being counted and getting our fair share of representation and our fair share of money. And so we encourage folks to go home, be poll monitors, to fill out their 2020 census, to ensure that we get our fair share, and to take part in community, take part in your local government. You know, bring your voice to that table, because as I said before, we understand that the importance is in small communities. So we want folks to take the message that we take from Washington back to their communities.
Dr. Shabazz, I guess to kind of make it plain, if people were doing that before, because we've been talking about that for quite some time, and really at an extremely intense level after finding out what happened to Ahmaud Arbery, or maybe I should say after what happened to George Floyd, or maybe I should say what happened to Michael Brown, or maybe I should say what happened to the many names that are on that list. Is the march just to make black folks feel good if we've already been doing that?
My dear brother, I don't believe that's the intention of Reverend Sharpton and his co-organizers, is just to make people feel good. I believe that Reverend Sharpton, I know he's serious about civil rights, and I believe that they're sincere about having a better America. But I'm like a doctor here on this line, and I got to give the patient the honest diagnosis. The future is going to be much worse, my brother. That's why you're seeing 100 cars go up in flames and the people immediately go start burning up the systems of power. That's why you saw the Minneapolis Police Department burn down, the courthouses in Tennessee burn down, because we're headed, unfortunately, for a race war. Because every time demonstrations and what you call strong actions happen, and they go for months and months and demonstrate, and then after that, the same thing happens again. The people are getting more restless. They won't even tolerate Reverend Sharpton and them trying to tone them down. They will be on Reverend Sharpton because the people are getting angrier and angrier. And then a white man came with a rifle, a 17-year-old, and shot and killed a couple of protesters. So now violence is becoming the norm. And if violence doesn't work, then it's going to be more violent. And then there's going to be, surely there is right now, watching the Republican convention, white backlash. Because they're saying that all of the demonstrators and protesters are coming to kill white people in the suburbs. And so Trump, unfortunately, may get the white backlash win behind him, and if he gets back in the office, things are going to be inflamed more. Brother, I wish I had a better diagnosis. I'm a civil rights attorney. I've settled cases against police departments and gotten paid handsomely. A man getting shot in the back and paralyzed, then spinal cord for the rest of his life. Attorney Benjamin Crump, who was on the case, he's going to make him some good money. Donald Temple and maybe listening on the line. But civil cases and civil judgments and lawyers getting paid and even the good families getting paid has not stopped the problem. Insurance companies paid those bills. So, my dear brother, the diagnosis is the leadership must produce stronger results. They can't lullaby the people to sleep because the people are getting angrier. And unfortunately, the country is getting more polarized. And I wish I could tell you it's going to be all right, but I can't. I'm going to tell you, as lawyers, as self-defense people, or whoever we are, church people, we're going to have to unite, and we're going to have to fight. And participate in the election. Vote your local interest. All you want to. I say do that. But also know that this is much bigger than voting. We're talking about the human right of our people and our survival. And we must be honest, we are at war.
I want to ask you both about an incident that happened here in the district on Monday. Viral video has surfaced of protesters who were shouting at a group of white people eating at a restaurant on patios in Columbia Heights. Well, this happened on Monday. I don't know whether or not you guys have seen this video, but one of the things that I find fascinating about it is that the people who were doing the shouting and talking about the people in the restaurant having white privilege were white. You had white people yelling at white people about white privilege. Now, today, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser said that she thinks it doesn't have anything to do with the demand for social justice. But what do you think about that? I was looking at it the way somebody would look at a new kind of bug on the wall that they had never seen before. Because it, in one sense, you know, it just didn't make sense to me. But in another sense, is somebody, are white people getting, you know, some white people getting the message, Tyler?
Yes, sir. That's obvious. That's obvious. Some are trying to pass the John Brown test these days. Things are getting radicalized. That's basically what you're saying. Things are getting radicalized when you see even white people going to these lengths. And so, yeah, it's a new kind of bug and bird. Sometimes it somehow smacks of the 60s because so much of it went on in the 60s. However, that just bespeaks to how bad the problem is when you see whites even going to these efforts, to these links.
Mm-hmm. Tyleek, what do you think about that?
In the words of Reverend Sharpton, what he said, you know, we have, you know, got over Jim Crow, and now we're dealing with Jim Crow Esquire in this moment. It gets more trickier. It's a little more strategic. It's a little more precise of how the tactics are. So we just have to adjust how we go about, you know, these issues. It's a little more difficult. And it gets frustrating. But I believe if we keep the pressure, if we keep in the streets, if we keep, you know, keep our eyes on the prize and, you know, utilize our power in this moment, we have the ability to shift not only this moment for ourselves, but for generations to come.
What is our power, in your opinion?
Our economic power, our political power. I would say those two, our money power, our political power.
Mm-hmm. What is it that, and you're a young person, and when, you know, as, you know, as a young person who is not only, you know, part of this movement, this, you know, commitment march movement, but you're still in, you know, in the learning process, as opposed to somebody such as, you know, myself or Dr. Shabazz, who, you know, we've all kind of, you know, been through, you know, the mill, and we've attacked this from our various and sundry perspectives, whether it's, you know, black media or in the courtroom or what have you. But from your perspective, when you're talking about a young person, what is it that that young people are seeing that perhaps those of us who are more seasoned are not?
I think we see an opportunity to get involved and get engaged and to be at the decision-making table. We see the ability to vote folks out who don't represent our needs and our interests. We see a need, as we see in Congress, you're not seeing the standard politician, or you're seeing more folks who are just ordinary people who have a love for community and a love for you know, this thing that America calls life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, where we see more folks who are just not your ordinary politicians running for office. And so we see that political power, and we see that political wave across the nation, and that's inspiring to us, because we understand our power in this moment. We understand that our generation has the ability to shift a whole political atmosphere, to shift a whole country. And so I think that's the inspiration that we have. We understand our power in this moment, and we understand that we have the power as young people collectively to shift the narrative of this America that we've been seeing time and time again.
Dr. Chavez, I do want to go back to today's actions as relates to the NBA. The Washington Mystics from the WNBA were taken to the court today with the name of Jacob Blake on the backs of their jersey, which when you talk about using one's power and using one's voice, I think that is particularly fascinating. Do you believe that, for example, the LeBron James and, you know, the Washington Mystics and the Milwaukee Bucks, and by extension, you know, other members of the NBA, are not just using this as a form of protest, but is this also an educational moment for those who otherwise would not pay attention?
I agree that it's all of that. It's an educational moment for them and us. It's a protest moment, and it's something that we should study and applaud. It's significant when you see the NBA players stand up and you see the Black Lives Matter all on the court and everything. That's significant. And we just hope that the NBA or any of these white-dominated franchises are not just trying to co-opt the movement. I give the players the benefit of the doubt. They've stood up for the cause. My concern is if this kind of objection by the players and support by athletes and entertainers in the vein of Muhammad Ali, if it doesn't have any effect and another Jacob Blake has happened, we put on some more uniforms, we write on some more streak, we're going to run out, my dear brother, of certain kinds of action. And if the Bucks and the other players took off a night on the demonstration, then if that don't work, and it won't work, I'm sorry to say, because the culture of white males killing black people cannot be reversed. I just hate to tell you that. I mean, just as the old folks said, these folks ain't changing, you know? And so my only fear is that so much progressive action like this could happen, and the next killing happened, and the next killing happened, levels of frustration will rise even further, and more radical action will be taken. So you asked the power about our power as a people. I would say, number one, black people have the right and the power of self-defense. That I predict and I prophesize that in the very near future, the Second Amendment right and the rights of black people to defend themselves and to defend their brethren will increase in a strong way, and that probably won't solve the whole problem. And I really honestly can't tell you where this thing is headed, brother, because it's no play game, it's no joke, it's no uniform. I mean, all these things are nice. I don't make a mockery out of it. But the killings are going to keep happening, and if we run out of demonstrations and run out of signs and slogans, what the heck is going to happen next?
To that point, one of the things that came out of Kenosha, Wisconsin today when they had the press conference about the arrest of this 17-year-old and the incidents from last night, the chief of police in Kenosha said
that there were people, organizations, he didn't differentiate, saying that they should be deputized so that they can, you know, protect life and property. His response was something like, oh, hell no, because he was concerned that what happened last night with the killing of the two protesters and the wounding of a third, by deputizing them, then that would certainly increase the liability. And it was quite prophetic in that he said he wasn't going to allow that to happen. But with that said, are you concerned about, you know, these militia groups that not just showed up in Kenosha last night, but they marched around the state house in Kentucky, and they marched around the state house in Richmond, and we have seen these groups who are legally able to exercise their Second Amendment rights. But are you concerned that this will be problematic as more people of color begin to raise their voices in protest?
Oh, it's a natural. It's natural. The more, every time a demonstration occurs, there's some white people in America that go and raid them gun stores. And that's why the gun stores are almost empty. But they weren't just empty because of protest. They were empty when Obama came in. They started emptying through the Trump administration. And so just because the white man, even though he's very vocal with their killing last night or the other night, just because he's not as vocal out on the street doesn't mean he's not reacting also. You know, he reacts from a number of circumstances because he just has what Public Enemy call fear of a black planet. And so what we can't do, my dear brother, is really be all defensive and keep worrying about, we know they're going to arm up and get more violent. That's just honest to truth. They're going to arm up. And black people have to take stronger self-defense actions as well. We just have to up our defenses, brother. We can't go like Martin Luther King, my dear Dr. King, and believe that nonviolent is going to work with a violent enemy.
Tyler, what is the thing that worries you the most as we move beyond Friday, move beyond the commitment march?
Well, of course, as we know, I said before, time and time again, we hear the names over and over again. We hear the names of George Floyd, we hear the names Trayvon Martin, we hear the names of Ahmaud Arbery. And what scares me the most is, you know, we continue to, you know, do the pressure. We continue to keep the pressure. And I can, you know, the thought that runs in my head is, you know, I can have the most accomplished resume and I can do all this great work. But at the end of the day, when I step outside, I'm still just a black man in America. And it's just, you know, realizing that concept. But for me, like I said, being a man of faith, I know that the work that's being done just won't be in vain. And so that mentality and understanding that, you know, as I said, when we talked about commemorating the march, I think also understanding and seeing, you know, the historical aspect of how things came out of that march. And so I don't know, just that scary, you know, that fact of just knowing, you know, you can do all this, you know, great work. But at the end of the day, the fact of the matter is, in this, like, you're still a black man in America. You're still black in America and still fighting.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Chavez, as you're still practicing, right? You're still in court, right?
Absolutely.
So with that said, and you've been doing this for quite some time, have you been able to sit back, and this goes to the heart of why this event is coming up on Friday, as a civil rights attorney, have you been able to sit back and see if there has been a change in the way that certain decisions have come down when you are in court over the past 5, 10, 15, 20 years or so? Have you had to adjust your strategy as you continue not to just fight for clients, but keeping in mind the issues that are going to be brought to the fore on Friday and beyond. Talk to me, sir. about what goes through your mind when you were going into court.
I think your question is, has the judicial system changed or become more fairer in my years of become more fair
or less fair
in my years of practice?
Yes, sir.
And the question, the answer to the question is, honestly, brother, I really can't say yes. It depends on the jurisdiction. Just shortly, not long ago, a couple months ago or so, I was in mediation and settled the case of Tony Green, a young African-American shot and killed by Georgia police officer Zachariah Presley, who chases him and on a personal vendetta, shoots and guns him down, lies in court, gets off of the manslaughter charges, and ultimately we go into mediation. Well, we're in mediation with the Georgia boys, and, you know, you would figure with all of the protests and everything raging that they would be more respectful, they would be more conciliatory towards resolving the matter on behalf of the family. But I can honestly tell you that that was not the case. They are still entrenched in these circuits, like the 11th Circuit and the 10th Circuit. Only, my dear brother, if you have it so, where it's like so obvious and right on tape where everybody's watching, will they just try to resolve these cases? Like, I believe the George Floyd case will be rapidly resolved, or this case here will probably be rapidly resolved. But many attorneys who are listening to me right now and know from dealing with cases, police brutality, false arrests, excessive force in this jurisdiction and other jurisdictions will tell you that the same mentality is pervasive, because they figure these things come and go. They figure the people get hyped up over the George Floyd stuff and it's in the media, but it looked like a few weeks ago that all the demonstrations had died out. Boom. Now it's back again. So, my dear brother, I cannot say that the judicial system has become better or become more liberal. I can't say that. Mm. And my website, just so you know, of course, my website is blackrightsmatter.org. Blackrightsmatter.org. That's the website for Black Lawyers for Justice. And I will review your police brutality case if you really buy me. I'd be more than happy to. Anybody listen. Mm.
Thank you so much. You know, Tylik, when, for you personally, what is the thing that you will be most focused on for as you move forward beyond Friday? Is it going to be, is it voting? Is it, you know, perhaps, civil rights? Is it perhaps police brutality? You know, it's hard to keep all of these balls in the air, even for activists, young activists such as yourself. And if you could say to, you know, the masses what you believe is the most important issue to come out of Friday, what do you think it would be?
Yeah, I think that definitely reimagining how we see public safety. As you understand, I understand that it is opportunities that keep communities safe. It is, you know, investment in mental health services, is the investment in education, is the investment in housing, is the investment in, you know, jobs in our communities that help keep our community safe. And so for me, is investing and looking at, you know, budgets and looking at, you know, and all that happens on the local, a lot on the local level. And so that will be a focus of mine. I also serve as a policy advisor. And so I'm really big, as we understand, we're in a digital age. And so when we're talking about broadband and internet accessibility, a time where children and Black children don't have access to internet and don't have access to broadband, those are some of the issues that I focus on. Because I understand that opportunities help keep our community safe. So reimagining what public safety looks like in this time.
Well, even in the reimagining of the issues, I think the tactics must also be reimagined and fluid because no one would have expected us to be a witness to what happened to a George Floyd or to an Ahmaud Arbery or to a Jacob Blake. And now that these things have happened in probably one of the biggest watershed moments in American history, activists or just people who just care need to always keep their ear to the ground as, you know, we move beyond this 57th anniversary on Friday and this commitment march, something to definitely think about. I want to thank both of you, Tyleek McMillan and Dr. Malik Shabazz, for the work that you're doing, for participating in this program. And I urge you both on Friday to be safe so that we can continue the work that is before us. Thank you both so much.
Yes, sir. Both of you, my brothers. Thank you. It's an honor to be on with you and my brother from the National Action Network. I see you on Friday.
Right. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM. Channel 141 for this Wednesday, August 26th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.